United States versus Garthus. Ms. Kim?
My name is Helen Kim, and I represent the appellant, in this case, Dennis Garthus. In this case, the district court imposed a 30-year sentence on a 44-year-old, cognitively limited, medically impaired man. And the question that's raised on appeal is whether the court issued a sufficient statement of reasons when it also issued the
30-year sentence. That the judge was persuaded, you know, by these psychiatric reports and sentence him to 15 years. That's the statutory minimum. What happens at the end of 15 years?
As far as where Mr. Garthus will go?
Yeah.
He'll be released on a term of supervised release for life. He would most likely either go back home to his parents if they were still alive, or he would...
But surely at the end of the 15 years, he ought to be committed. Shouldn't be walking around. He shouldn't be walking around in 15 years.
Respectfully, I disagree. If the court is referring to a level of dangerousness that Mr.
Yes, precisely.
Had,
there's no reason to think he'll be behaving any differently 15 years from now, or that supervised release is effective.
Particularly if you accept the diminished capacity point, which suggests that part of this is happening for reasons over which he has basically no control.
Again, respectfully, I would disagree, because the diminished capacity argument was, of course, tied to the mitigating factors at the time he committed the
crime. Look, the problem with diminished capacity, as Judge Wood is, it makes the guy more dangerous. So I'm worried about his, I don't care whether he's civilly committed or criminally convicted, but I'm worried about falling, which is what you want, him to fall between two stools. So for diminished capacity, he gets a lighter sentence. But then you don't regard diminished capacity as any basis for civil commitment. So at the end of 15 years, he's back, you know, engaged in this pornographic activity.
And if the district court felt that that was the reason, if the district court believed that Mr. Garthus was so dangerous that the diminished capacity argument was not relevant to its decision.
Well, that's what the judge thought when giving him the 30 years.
Again, I would respectfully disagree, only because the judge never mentioned that ground.
You know, I'm going to take you in a little other place, I think, because in order to make out a diminished capacity claim, he has to show not just that he suffered significantly reduced mental capacity, but also that his condition contributed substantially to the commission of the crime. And I need to know, where in the record will we find evidence that his intellectual problems, and his learning disabilities and any of those other conditions contributed substantially to the commission of the crime? And I don't see that.
Your Honor, they were included in the exhibits that were in the sentencing memorandum filed. So specifically, there were two experts that were retained. One was a neurological evaluation where that doctor spoke about the ruminative thinking and the limited ability to take in information that Mr. Garthus had.
But Judge Rovner's question, if I can repeat it, really, I don't see where in Dr. Gamzee's report is the main one, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah,
okay.
I
don't see where in Dr. Gamzee's report he makes any connection between the pornographic activities or the preoccupation with girls' underwear and his attention deficit disorder or diminished capacity or his low IQ. How are they connected?
He does actually make direct statements where he says that the absence of treatment for the undiagnosed attention deficit disorder not only made it more likely.
No, I don't understand. Attention deficit disorder means you have trouble concentrating and so on. What does that have to do with pornography? I mean, if you have attention deficit disorder, you'll have trouble getting good grades in school. Of course, he has low IQ. What does that have to do with pornography?
Again, that was where it was Dr. Gamzee's opinion that the misdiagnosis caused an increased proclivity to act out the pedophilia.
I don't get that.
And again,
where did he give a reason for that? What's the logic of it, right? I mean, you could imagine, I don't know what causes pedophilia, but you could imagine a doctor saying, you know, it's a neurological condition or something happened in infancy or something of that. That I understand. But how does attention deficit disorder or low IQ, are people who are pedophiles characteristically people with low IQs? I don't get that.
Not necessarily. I certainly don't know of any.
What is low IQ having to do with your sexual tastes? Right?
I don't think that Dr. Gamzee linked the low IQ necessarily. I think what he did was...
Well, attention deficit disorder. What does that have to do with your sexual preferences?
It was a combination of his attention deficit disorder along
what
with...
What does that have to do with your sexual preferences?
I don't know what it has to do with...
Well, then what does it have to do with his criminal activity?
According to the doctor, if it was untreated, then the...
Okay, so you treat it. You treat it. You raise his IQ 20 points. What does that have to do with pedophilia?
Because then the compulsive ruminative thinking would no longer be, rampant.
What does compulsive thinking have to do with any of this? Some men, I think it's roughly 1 in 1,000, have a sexual preference for prepubescent children. Now, where is the evidence that those people are disproportionately low IQ or attention deficit disorder or have any other condition which the defendant has?
There isn't any link, which is exactly the
point
of what we made.
Then there's no basis for what Gamzee said.
But, Your Honor, even if the district court judge went through the
Look what he says. In my experience, more than 90% of people who are treated for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder experience significant improvements in their life, including improvements in their ability to focus, their ability to be productive at work, their ability to perform better in school. Now, what does that have to do with sex?
It doesn't have to do with whether Mr. Garthus would have that tendency or have those fantasies. And
is it about control?
It's about the ability to control it. It's about the ability to...
Well, where did Gamzee say they were? Where did Gamzee refer to control? You can be productive in work. You can perform great in school. You can focus. You can still be a pedophile, right?
That's true. But again, just even taking out the pedophilia or the pedophilic
individual
in the sense of somebody with ADD, certainly to receive medication is a way to control that
Here's the problem. The problem is that the evidence here simply shows that his ADHD made him more likely to consume child pornography, but it doesn't even hint that he was unable to control those actions, and that's the problem here.
So we believe that the problem is, again, that this court has gone through more careful analysis of the issues that were presented by Mr. Garthus than the district court ever did.
But they weren't presented, and that's the problem. They were not presented to the district court.
They were, Your Honor.
No, they were not.
In the form of a sentencing memorandum that was extensive in the form of arguments that were made at the time of sentencing that were quite extensive. And then we have the district court that, after receiving 2 psychological evaluations, a 40-page sentencing memorandum, 2 responses from the government, an argument at sentencing, you have a district court that essentially says that the court believes the guidelines are reasonable under the circumstances and finds no justification to depart from the guidelines.
When he says, when Gamzee says, it is my opinion with reasonable medical certainty that Mr. Garthus's pedophilic fantasies are chronic and not likely to change over time, even with continued therapy, then what is the reason to think that he should get a lighter sentence?
I see that my time is up, but if I could just respond.
Well, I wouldn't ask question. You the question if I didn't want you to answer it, okay?
Thank you, Judge. So the issue is, again, that Mr. Garthus was not just with the diminished capacity, which is one of the arguments we may not address, but also that he was physically impaired, that he was vulnerable to abuse while he was in prison.
What does it have to do with his chronic pedophilia?
And so the question becomes whether or not 15 years is sufficient but not greater than necessary compared to what the district court did, which is the 30 years.
Sufficient for what?
To meet the goals of sentencing.
To cure him?
3553, no. And
his own doctor is saying he can't be cured. His own witness is saying this man can't be cured. So why would we let him out to molest?
Because respectfully, there are people who can think a certain way, and the danger to society certainly comes from whether or not they're going to act on those.
But he has acted in the past.
He has. But he was untreated at the time, and that's.
But where does Gamzee
say? His doctor's saying he can't be helped. So
where does Gamzee say that if he's treated, he'll be less likely to engage in this pedophilic pornographic activity?
That, I believe, is what his ultimate.
Does he say? Or do you point where he to me where he says that? Good luck finding that.
Yeah, because.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Romero?
May it please the court, my name is Jessica Romero, and I represent the appellee of the United States. The district court gave a sufficient statement of reasons in imposing a low-end guideline range sentence for the defendant. The district court adequately touched upon defendant's arguments in mitigation. It did not extensively delve into factors which were not persuasive.
Now, I have to say, I'm going to put the question of harmless error to one side, but the district court didn't engage in anything. The district court has a page and just says, I think the sentencing guidelines are fine. And on this record, even if the district court should have given a greater explanation, it's hard for me to see how any error there might have been harmful. But, this is really not an explanation.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
The district court didn't address, the parts of the medical evidence that indicate that persons with Mr. Garthus's problems have pure impulse control. And that certainly does seem highly relevant to his diminished capacity argument. And I'm wondering why we shouldn't remand for consideration of evidence of poor impulse control. It's just not there.
Your Honor, my response is twofold. I understand the court's concern. The district court could certainly have said more.
Well, here we have the district court. It starts at page A25 or page 19 of the transcript, if you prefer. And it's just kind of a few comments about troubled upbringing and He says, I believe the counsel thinks that he won't reoffend with proper treatment. And then all of a sudden he says, the court understands in some instances I can disagree with the guidelines, but this isn't one of them. I think the guidelines are reasonable. And then, boom, into sentencing. So there's really nothing.
If I may, there's a paragraph between two of the paragraphs that Your Honor identified that starts with, certainly the court takes note that there are many issues. In that paragraph.
And then that he says, certainly the court takes note that there may be issues which have not been properly addressed with regards to Mr. Garthus. The court is aware of his physical ailments. But this is not the first time that Mr. Garthus has taken advantage of a child for his own gratification. And then he goes on to say, these are real people, of course, they are. So, it's
not there.
It's just not there. I mean, as I say, it may not have any impact on the ultimate outcome of this case, but I think for me it would be helpful to think about harmless error as opposed to anything else.
Yes, Your Honor. I will address the harmless error then. As the court identified in connection with Ms. Kim's presentation, neither the Ganzi report nor the Cozio report established a causal relationship between the purported conditions that purportedly established a decreased mental capacity, which our position is neither of those prongs were established by the Ganzi report. More generally, something worth noting is the Ganzi report noted time and time again that the defendant had pedophilia, and was his conclusion, Dr. Gamzee's, was that he was not likely to reoffend in the context of molesting other minors. The crime at issue here was the possession, distribution, and transportation of child pornography, which is a distinct offense than the actual physical molestation of minors. So on its face, the report provided absolutely zero information about any causal relationship between the crimes at issue and any purported compulsory disorder, which our position was not established as well. As the Gamzee report goes into detail about how the defendant had good judgment, was not likely to recidivate in the future because of those circumstances, which contradict the notion that it was a compulsory disorder. More generally, there's nothing in the court's case law that requires the district court to go into detail about unpersuasive factors, and our position is the Gamzee report was unpersuasive on its face. The diminished capacity argument was unpersuasive on its face.
But see, I'm worried about that the trend of the government's arguments in this area, because you are pushing very hard toward the ability of the judge just to say, I'm going to give a guideline sentence, and that's all I have to say about it, because you're putting behind a veil the whole thinking process that the judge goes through to come to the conclusion that a particular argument is unpersuasive. Now, we could just do de novo sentencing review, heaven forbid. It's not really what I think this court should be in the business of doing. But that's, in a sense, where you're pushing us, because when we don't have any idea why the judge thought it was unpersuasive, we can come to our own conclusion. We may say, yeah, I know it looks pretty unpersuasive to me. But that's not what the process that the Supreme Court has described in cases like Kimbrough, et cetera, seems to call for. The judge needs to give us a window into the thinking that led to that outcome. And I just see a trend in the government pushing toward just one boilerplate, sentencing guidelines look fine, that's it.
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a couple responses specific to this case. One was the district court did explicitly address the application of the guidelines in this particular context. One of the issues that was raised by defense counsel was whether the child pornography guidelines are too high across the board and whether they're supported by empirical evidence. The district court expressly held in its discretion that it did find that they were applicable here and there was no rational basis for departure.
Right, so that's the argument we're not happy with.
It's four sentences.
The second argument, and unfortunately I know the court's position is to disagree on this one, is that the fairest reading of the transcript was that the district court did give adequate consideration and indication to the court that there was meaningful.
Please don't argue that. It's embarrassing.
Just, you're defining adequacy in a way that's really frightening. That's,
yes,
I think, the
it's
problem.
Embarrassing.
If you think it's adequate, then that's a pretty low bar.
Fine, Your Honor. I think ultimately the issue is if the district court has discretion at sentencing, it has the discretion to accept the guidelines. In this case, it gave reasons for doing so.
Does it have the discretion to explain to us its discretion?
Certainly.
Okay. And that's what's lacking here. And that's what we're getting. It isn't just you and, you know, it's just as Judge Wood said, we are seeing such a trend of this.
Your Honor, I think in this case, because the error would be harmless, we're not in a position necessarily where it's the most serious situation. I understand the court's concerns. Our position is any error would be harmless. For those reasons and the reasons in our case, the district court's judgment be affirmed.
Now, that's a good argument.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Romero. So, Ms. Kim, your time expired, but you can have some more time to be tortured.
We don't want to torture you too much because we don't have any boiling water here.
I would just comment on the harmless error issue, which, again, is that, of course, this court has to have complete confidence that the district court would have.
Well, I'll tell you, there are two problems I have. First, you haven't told me yet. I asked you, where in Gamzee's report is there anything to suggest that his pedophilia and pornographic interests can be treated? There's nothing. Now, the other thing I want to mention to you, your argument to the judge, you never said anything to suggest that his pedophilic tendencies could be dealt with. What you said was he wasn't a predator, that is, he wasn't going to do what he did to his niece again, and you said that he's got heart disease and this and that, and isn't it sad? You didn't say anything about his likelihood of recidivism with regard to pornography. And when the judge delivered his admittedly inadequate discussion of the evidence, he said, well, whether he's going to be a predator or not, you know, it doesn't matter. If it's just the if it's just the pornography, that's bad enough. And he mentioned the fact, yeah, he's got problems, you know, mental problems and his heart disease and so on. And that's unfortunate, but it's not going to lead me to impose a lighter sentence. And I think it's a case of invited error. You told the judge at great length what you thought were the mitigating factors. And you never suggested that one mitigating factor is that a 15-year sentence might be adequate with psychiatric treatment to create a reasonable probability that he would cease to, be a market for this very, very repulsive pedophilic pornography.
Judge, perhaps I was relying then too heavily on what I thought would be inferred from Dr. Gamzee's report, but if the case was remanded, I would certainly make sure to argue that point before the district court.
But how can you when it's not there?
Your Honor, I think that not only was Dr. Gamzee not called to testify during, of course, the first hearing, but second, again, there wasn't much dialogue beyond the initial statements that were made by the government and then myself at the sentencing hearing. The judge, although he's not under an obligation to engage us in a back and forth, there was, again, no commentary made so that even any of the concerns that the court had could have been responded to the way that I am here
today. So a second strike at the apple.
No, Judge. I think that the district court still had an obligation to issue a sufficient statement of reasons and address the arguments that had a non-frivolous basis and a factual basis.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Kim. And you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Ms. Romero as well. So next case.